Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
As a parent, Timory, I feel like I have a lot to worry about. I've got three girls, two teenage girls, a young son that's now entering that age when you worry about what they're going to look at online, and just so many things. One of the premier things that has even surprised me, and I feel like I'm pretty jaded, to be honest. I just feel like I'm a cynical man who you're not surprised. I expect these things. But I have been astonished by how much sexting goes on and how young it happens. We've got boys as young as like 11 and 12 sending naked pictures of themselves to our daughters. That's the parents in my community. This is one of their primary concerns. These boys, and it goes on. It's not like it stops when they get 12 either. So you fill in the blanks here. But boys as young as 11 and 12 sending naked pictures, and the pressure for those girls to send something back is absolutely immense. Like, I don't think we can underestimate how much pressure teenage girls feel to send naked pictures of themselves. And studies suggest, in fact, I'm looking at one right now, they're not really equipped to say no. You know, as much as we've tried to say to women, you know, over the last 50 years, no, you're strong enough, you can do it, you can, they actually don't feel like they can say no.
It breaks my heart, because I think young girls, there's the pressure of, first, I don't think they expect this to happen, at least in the first encounter when it does, whether it's a picture coming toward them or the request for a picture. It is such a violation in and of itself that I think sometimes when shocking things happen, we don't respond in normal ways, essentially. And so then you add the fact that there's pressure when the shocking thing is happening, and the fact that it's on a phone or a device so that there's not actual human interaction, the pressure kind of changes. And there's almost what appears to be a veil of anonymity that's also not there. Yeah. But in some ways, I think we feel that we have when we're on social media, that I see these young girls really seem to be struggling with. And I'm just going to add there, while we are talking about this from the perspective of pressure put on the young girls, I also see that a lot of young girls want attention. And so there are some girls who are just offering these pictures for attention, not even being requested. So I think we're talking about a specific group who are being pressured.
Yeah,
here.
And I would guess, though, it would be my guess that those who are offering them up for the attention have already gone through the previous step. That would be my assumption. I don't think that young girls, you know, reach 13 and say, I'm going to go get attention, and hey, I'm just going to send naked pictures of myself. I don't think that generally happens. Probably they have already gone through that process where somebody sexted them and wanted the pictures back. And then they realized, okay, this is the way to get approval or whatever from others. And now they've started offering. But in general, in fact, I'm looking at a study right now, 7,000 young women, and the percentages are pretty overwhelming. Girls do not want to do this. They're not actually just offering themselves up. And they don't want to respond when those boys ask. They don't actually want to send the pictures back. But here's the thing, and I think this goes to just femininity in general. They don't want to hurt people's feelings. I don't want to offend you. I don't want to break whatever relationship you think you have with that boy. I want to love you, and I want to be loved, and I actually think that this is going to do that. Like, I don't want to hurt you. I actually think there's some, you know, generosity behind some of this. And so the girls send the pictures back sort of as, well, I don't want to break our relationship, you know, and it's just so sad. They're not realizing this is doing nothing for anybody's relationship. All right. This is hurting relationships. But I do think the motivation behind it is that, because it's not like these girls are like, oh, this is, you know, this is awesome, this is really what I want to do. No, mostly they don't.
In all 7,000 of the cases across the board, not a single one of the girls said that they felt good or relieved, you know, comfortable about having done it. Like, there was no like, oh man, I feel really good, I'm glad that I did this. And, you know, something you just brought up, Don, really stood out to me, and it goes back to an interview I heard talked about this last week. And forgive me, I don't remember who it was, but it was an interview having to do with the wage gap between men and women. And part of what was pointed out, in addition to, you know, if we talk about wage gap, the fact there's a lot we could talk about, but without getting off point, what was said was, for women, women are cooperative. They're willing to cooperate with things. So they're not as likely to go against the grain and say, hey, give me this raise. Yeah. Hey, this is what they're just cooperative, you know. And it was funny because we were talking about this, and then a friend of mine showed up late, and the other guy with me was like, dude, you're late. And I was like, oh no, it's okay, you know, just been out here a couple minutes. And he's like, this is what we were just talking about. Women are more cooperative. And, you know, I think about this, and I think when you mentioned the feeling side of it, we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, you know, I want people to feel included. I think sometimes women cooperate with things that actually devalue themselves, and they misunderstand being easygoing with devaluing who they are and like actually doing more harm both to themselves and others.
Well, and this is actually taken to very extremes. And this is something that this has been revelatory to me as I've made this documentary I'm working on about the sexual revolution. Because I've gone around and talked to young ladies who have been part of the hookup culture, whether it's on college campuses or then further into their careers. To a woman, every single woman that I talked to said, you know what, me and my friends, we did not want to do any of these things. We didn't want to go out and just have promiscuous sex. You know, we get these images from like Sex and the City where women are in control and they're making all the decisions and they're deciding. They're like, it's not actually like that. What happens is we enter college and we realize, oh, this is what is expected. And it's all about male pleasure. It's not about female pleasure. Females are not getting a lot of pleasure from the hookup culture. That's just a fact. What happens is I actually asked a lady directly, I'm like, so the morning after in your dorm or whatever, is anybody looking back on the night before saying that was awesome? She's like, absolutely nobody. Not a single woman. It's just what you said about the sexting. Of 7,000 girls, nobody looked back on the sexting and said that was great. It's exactly the same thing with the hookups. The women are not enjoying these hookups. They're not looking back on it saying that was awesome. They look back on it with disgust, with a lot of shame, unfortunately, a lot of shame. And you know what? But you know, you dig into their motivation. They're like, well, it was just going that direction. And I didn't want to say no. And I just went along with it. I just went along with it. And it's the very same thing. But it takes to such radical extremes. That actually talked to a girl who was date raped. Timory, this is, I opened the movie with this. This is a little preview. I'm giving you a little hint about how the movie opens. She was date raped, and she had so much shame from this, she actually went to confession because she thought it was her fault. She did not even acknowledge until months and years later that she had been violated. Mm-hmm. That she's like, I shouldn't, you know, it was my fault. I shouldn't have been in that situation. I didn't even realize ultimately. And you're like, no, it was not your fault. But she's like, I was so accustomed, the mindset within the hookup culture, I was so accustomed to just doing what the guys wanted and just going along with it. And you just don't offend to the point where it was a date rape. And so, yeah, this is so dangerous. I mean, girls, say no, stop it. You can, you have the power, please.
Well, and you just brought up a really important point, and that is people who have been sexually abused end up usually blaming themselves, and it's not till years later they recognize what happened. I think we have a lot more people who have been sexually abused, and I'm not just saying any sexual assault is totally not okay. But, you know, there are a lot of people who are hashtagging Me Too whose butts have been slapped or they've been overly ogled. I think that there's a lot of disrespect for people who have been sexually abused. And I think we've got to keep it in context. A lot of people have been who claim that they haven't. And even just the pressure to provide photos for other people is a major form of sexual abuse. And I think that we need to help young girls have a healthy self-view, self-perception of themselves and self-worth that helps them early on. And this is where I can't recommend this book enough, Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. It's an excellent book. You can start reading it to your four-year-old, five-year-old, helping them to identify good pictures versus bad pictures without explicitly talking about pornography, but helping them to be able to come to you when they see them, or maybe they're requested of them. And I think that if young kids understand there's a difference between good and bad images from an early age, they've now been equipped with the tools when something unreasonable is requested of them, no matter who it is, say, hey, you know, there's something wrong here. These young girls are prepared. And I think, too, for the boys, they're in transitions in life, and we're not giving them any easy out, but helping the young men to hear that those requests are not appropriate.
And this is another example, by the way, of how the sexual revolution has taken the power out of the hands of women. Because women do feel powerless. In the past, they would have had a lot more power. I want to encourage, on one hand, you do have the power, ladies, all right? You do have the actual strength and ability, but you're not inclined. Women are not, this is not meant to be derogatory, but women are not inclined to hurt other people's feelings, right? They are actually more nurturing, and I want to help you along, and I want to be friends with you and all this stuff. In the past, we had a real easy tool for saying no to a man, and frankly, a lot less men would have been asked. They would have been, well, you know what? We're not having sex because I'm not ready to get pregnant, and you're not ready to be a dad. The pill and all of the other contraceptive things have taken the power out of the hands of the woman. The woman in the past would not have had to go along with all of this because everyone would have understood, you know what? We're not ready to be parents. Therefore, we're not having sex tonight. Now, everybody just assumes that you're going to be on the pill or there's going to be 130,000 condoms in the Olympic Village or whatever. And that puts women at a huge disadvantage.
Right.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Don, just a minute ago, you mentioned that women don't like hurting people's feelings. Even this study, again, looking at 7,000 different cases. And what's great about this study, I'm not sure if you mentioned this earlier, women were able to go online anonymously. The average age for the girls contributing to this conversation, truly sharing stories, was 15 years old. Parents, listen up. The average age was 15. That means you had young girls much younger than this averaging out this number. We're talking about high schoolers, middle school kids. But what was interesting, talking about the feeling sides of not wanting to hurt each other's feelings, when the girls were asked to basically describe whether or not the boys were blameworthy, instead of describing or talking about the boys, instead they became self-critical. They didn't place any blame on these boys. They instead referred to themselves as weak, as pathetic, having low self-esteem and a horrible person. And on the flip side, when the girls didn't self-criticize, instead they would talk about other girls who were prudes.
Yeah. No, it's so backwards, but it is such an indication. One of the most striking interviews I did for Unprotected, the new documentary, I talked about the girl who was date raped, and she went to confession. And you know what she confessed? I mean, among other things, that she had cheated on her boyfriend. I mean, you, right? Like, no, you're being forced into a situation. You're being used right now. Yet the woman takes so much of the shame on herself. And, you know, you look at all these 7,000 women that were interviewed. I wanted to be a good girlfriend. I didn't want people to be angry. It's very relational, right? Like, they're very concerned about the relationship. The boy, honestly, is not.
Right.
He's concerned about ejaculating.
Right.
That's what he's concerned about.
I keep thinking about this, even as you mentioned the story, from the perspective of the priest. For any religious we have listening or people who work with priests, helping our priests to recognize there are certain things that they're hearing in the confessionals, and a lot of them do know this, where you actually need to recommend that someone see a therapist.
Yeah.
And maybe you have, you know, CatholicTherapist.com, because if a girl is coming and confessing something that she's date raped and she's blaming herself, she is now gone through a tremendous amount of trauma and needs help outside of this. And I mean, even she might be walking alone in this. You might have been the only person she's actually been confided in because she has a sense of shame.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's another story we have right here, Timory, that goes along with this. It's how to talk to your kids about sex in a sex-obsessed culture. And you talked about some of the ages. So the average age of those 7,000 girls that were interviewed is 15. That means you've got 12-year-olds, you've got 11-year-olds in there, averaging that out. And so on one hand, as a parent, I don't want to be talking to my young children about some of these things. And we certainly don't want to be talking about it in a way that public schools talk about it, for example, where they're just basically handing out condoms and showing them how when they're like 7 years old. But on the other hand, we certainly have to be talking about it. You can't just be, I mean, I'm trying not to be a judgmental parent. You know, it's like I get that I'm just hanging by the skin of my teeth most of the time. I'm just, you know, so when I see other parents do stuff, I'm like, you know what, do your best. I'm not going to judge you. I do get a little bit judgmental when I see like unrestricted access to phones in the hands of 10-year-old boys. And, you know, oh yeah, he takes it up to his bedroom and yeah, we don't really put any restrictions. I'm like, okay, that's insanity. Listen, at some level, we do have to talk to our kids because even if you're a parent like me who wouldn't allow the phone, their friends have the phones and their friends are doing this stuff. So there are some principles here, Timory, that I thought were decent about talking to your kids about sex.
And I have to say, before we even get into them, I think we need to preface the conversation for parents. Really listen up to this. If you have the expectation that your child is just going to have sex and you treat this topic this way, you've already done a tremendous amount of damage. Your kid's going to think it's okay, and that's what's expected of them, with no sexual ethic whatsoever. And I see a lot of parents, because I work with the parents, I work with the church educators, I work with the teens on this, and this is what I hear, this apathy, well, they're going to do it anyways, might as well teach them how. And my heart is breaking. So you need to understand that first and foremost when we talk about this.
Yeah, that's another one of those. This is insanity. People. I mean, on one hand, I get that kids, you know, they have free will. Like, kids are going to do stuff. It's not like I'm one of those parenting instructors who say, listen, look at my awesome kids. Yours can be that way, too. No, I don't have the awesome kids. They're great. But I'm just saying, like, no, I understand that kids have free will and kids are going to do stuff.
They make mistakes.
And as parents, we do not have complete control. On the other hand, expectations are huge. I hesitate. I doubt that any of my kids are watching right now, and I hesitate to share this, but there are certain expectations that I set as a dad that, frankly, I know that maybe I can't come. So, for instance, my older daughter now is to the age where we allow a little bit of dating. And she came to me one day and, you know, I asked, how are things? And we have very strict, you know, restrictions. But at some level, you're going to have to make your own decisions, right, about what you do. And she says, I asked her about something and she's like, oh, no, Dad. I mean, you would find out about that anyway. Like, whatever it was, you know.
That's
and
great.
And I thought, well, I don't know if I would have or not. But the fact that she expects me to find out about that and to be able to stop it, I love, right? Like, if your boyfriend has a little bit of fear in his eyes, even though probably it's unfounded, I'm okay with that, right? Like, you set, as parents, you set expectations for your kids. And if you're expecting them to do that bad stuff, no, right? Like,
yeah.
You got to change that around.
If they know that you care and that you're going to make the effort to always care for them, it makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, as we look at this, you guys, first and foremost, you guys are the primary influencers with regard to your teenager, your child's sexuality. And it's not just in high school. I think that this challenge continues to grow when the kids are outside of the home, in college. You know, I think that for a lot of people, they think, oh, I've got free rein. They should have the life skills to know that it still matters when they leave the home. That, yes, there's freedom, but freedom with responsibility. And that makes a big difference. So when they talk about, well, what can we do? Dr. Michael Artige is a practicing pediatrician for over 22 years. And he has written and worked a lot with the American College of Pediatricians. And his first thing that he recommends is, remember, don't underestimate your influence as a parent.
You know, this sort of goes with, I think it was last show, Timory, we had a discussion about the influence of family on your religious future, like kids who have the strong family have a strong faith generally. Same thing for sexual morality. Like, regardless of what the culture throws at them, and God knows I understand that the culture throws a lot of junk at our kids. It pains me every day. Ultimately, the major influence on your kids is going to be the family unit and, as parents, your relationship, right? Like, so the husband's relationship with the wife and the wife's relationship with the husband. If all of that is healthy and you've got healthy relationship with your kids, they're much less inclined to go pick, you know, an abusive husband or whatever. Now, I understand, again, I'm always hesitant to say that. I understand that's not a guarantee. I mean, kids, mm-hmm. They do crazy stuff? I mean, even the best of families produce kids that do crazy stuff. I'm not discounting that. But don't underestimate the influence that we do have and the fact that strong families, as a principle, it's not a guarantee, but as a principle, those strong, healthy families produce kids that are well-adjusted and pick the right mates and make the right decisions in college.
Absolutely. So then another great point that Dr. Michael ends up bringing up is share facts and emphasize the positive. So I think first, and this is something that we've got to continue to work on, because the sexual education of our church for a number of years was just don't do it. The big no of sex. And in fact, the church is saying a big yes to chastity, a yes to human sexuality within the right context. So if you can help your kids understand that sex is something that's good in the right time and place, they now have a positive attitude towards sexuality, even with seeing the sexually transmitted diseases and so forth, to help put everything in context.
Yeah, it's like a great, big, beautiful picture you present that is completely attractive, as opposed to just, well, you know, that's really ugly and don't make more mistakes to make it even uglier. I mean, that's not going to work, right? Kids do not expect, when you say, oh, well, don't have premarital sex because of disease, they're like, well, I'm not going to get the disease. I mean, it's true, don't get the disease. But ultimately, you want to paint a picture of, listen, do you want the beautiful, flourishing relationship? Do you want to be treated like the goddess that you are? This is the path to that. Do you want to be used? That's the pen. Right. So it's a great point.
Well, and I think with sexually transmitted diseases, I always am amazed that it's just a thing we don't talk about. It's not something that's a desire to be discussed. It's funny when I do different interviews and I'll bring up sexually transmitted diseases and the host is always shocked that that's even being discussed and they feel uncomfortable. But the reality is that there are especially young women whose lives are being totally destroyed by STDs and they can't have children later on ever. They have to continuously go through treatment at different points in time, sometimes to the point of total lifelong health risks.
Yeah, you're right. It's another one where you got to get the facts out there. And STDs are actually exploding. Why do we? Well, actually, we know. Why don't we? Because that would tell the lie of the whole sexual revolution.
Right.
But it's a huge, huge problem.
Right.
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timory on Relevant Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or Timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
So we're talking about how to talk to your kids about sex. This is a topic that I commonly travel on, educating parents, educators, and youth. But I always say, I can only say so much. You as a parent do so much more in your influence, example, and expectation. So we're looking at some of the other things. Next, I'd like to talk about how parents have this idea that everyone's doing it, so they're just going to have the idea, well, everyone's doing it, so okay, that's their attitude. But in reality, we've seen a huge decline in sexual activity, especially among millennials. While it may not feel like that, especially I think in high school, there are a lot of teenagers who are choosing not to have sex. I mean, we've seen essentially a decrease from 2005. We were at 46.8% of teens are sexually active to 41.2% are sexually active today.
Yeah, and I have great hope in this, largely because of the trajectory that smoking has taken. If you want to just give an example of how our attitudes have completely changed within a generation or two based on just simple health risks, look at smoking. How many, at least here in California, I hardly ever see anybody smoking. Do I anticipate that my kids are going to be tempted? Not really. Okay. This is not attractive to them. You know, yeah. It's like you have the ability as parents, and we have the ability as a culture to make things make people realize the unhealthy things that they are. And I think, you know what, the sexual activity among teenagers, they're starting to see that this is not good. This is not good for anybody. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's good news. Everybody's not doing it. And even if they were, doesn't mean that we couldn't change that, right? Like, that's, have hope. It's, you can't just throw in the towel on this stuff. You can't just like, oh, the culture's terrible, I guess my kids are going to go that way. No, I mean, come on, we got to fight for this. So it's a good point. It's not everybody's doing it, and even if they were, I'll add this one, doesn't mean that you can't be the change. And then this last one, Timory, is a big one. Don't be afraid to be the parent. And the first sentence here from Dr. Artiguez is, kids want limits even if they don't know it. This one I can affirm not only as a parent, but as a kid. I remember as a kid, you know, begging my parents, oh, please, please let me do this. And they're like, no. Sorry. And being sort of relieved that they said no. Like, do I really want to do that? I mean, do I really want that freedom? I was even self-aware at the time. I know that my sister, God bless her, she used to get in these big rows with my mom as a teenager. But I, you know what? I do remember talking to her about it later. And she's like, you know, secretly, I was thankful that I didn't get to go do that thing. Because you know what? I couldn't have handled it. And my parents were. And you know what? There's a certain comfort zone in not having to make all the decisions and being responsible for yourself. Like, having somebody looking out for you is a great deal. Now, as a parent, like, you think, well, why wouldn't parents want to be the parent? This is a huge deal. There's a lot of parents out there that are actually looking more for friendship from their kids. They want to be liked by their kids. They want to be seen as the cool kid, you know, along with them. And I mean, I kind of get it. I guess I've never been cool, so I've never sort of had that temptation. I've never expected my kids to see me. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a small temptation. But you know what? I mean, I've had explicit conversations with my kids saying, sorry, you know, I know that you're not going to like this. I know that I look this way to you, but it's not my job. It's not my job is protect you, try to guide you morally, all these things. You may or may not like me for it, and I'm going to have to just take that.
Right. Well, and I look at, what does the church in her wisdom have to say? The church says the parents are the primary educators of their children, not the primary friend,
yeah, right.
The primary educator. And that's a virtuous moral education above an education of knowledge. So it's not just, oh, we want you to have a good education and go to a great school. And that's what I hear a lot of parents talk about. I have peers who will look back and go to their parents and say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, why didn't you teach me this? And I've heard them say, well, we wanted you to have a good education. And they're talking about an academic education. But if the virtue, if the morality, if the faith does not come first, that good education of knowledge will never have a full impact on that person down the road.
You know, I was actually just talking about this at an event last night. Interesting you brought that up. One of the things we actually do as parents, unfortunately, in our priorities for our kids is actually make them more susceptible to leaving the church. And I actually focused on the passage of the parable of the sowers, where Jesus talks about there's four kinds of seeds, right? And one seed never gets started, gets plucked, and you never get. But three of the seeds start on the path. They follow Jesus. They start growing. And the two that don't make it, one produces fruit, but the two that don't make it, what brings them down? The persecution comes, but also the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth. And you think, well, what's that? What's the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth? Well, listen, I gotta make my way in the world, right? I gotta get a good job. I gotta get some money. I gotta get some prestige. I gotta get all of these things. And that requires a lot of work, a lot of pressure. It also involves a lot of worry. And you end up sort of, one, distracted from your walk mm-hmm. with Jesus, but also with the wrong priorities.
Right.
Are you gonna prioritize virtue? If you've been taught your whole life that what you need is the money and the job and the fame and the whatever, No, you're not. And so I was. That's what I was sharing with the parents. Like, be careful that you're actually not prioritizing things in your kid's life that are going to actually distract them and keep them from bearing fruit and living with Jesus. And again, I mean, as parents, you do have a particular job, and it's not to get your kids a good career, frankly.
And it's not the sports. It's not the popularity. It's not the clothes. And I think that that distraction is so easy because parents are so proud of their children, but they become proud about the wrong things. So what if they dress goofy and don't wear what you'd like? What matters first is that they are good, faithful, virtuous people. And, you know, you talk about this and the worries of the world. We talked about this on the last episode quite a bit. You know, you're leaving the show. You have a ton of new adventures ahead of you, but you even mentioned how I've lived in California for 25 years and you're moving to Oregon now. There's the worries of the world in a transition right there.
Yeah, and it totally can be a distraction, and it can cause you to make decisions that the world thinks are good. Right? Like, well, what's the world say? Well, I mean, you got to stay by the beach and you got to enjoy the sunshine. ultimately, again, as parents, though, what priorities are we setting for our kids? And here's the thing to sort of tie this together. So your priorities for your kids, like you said, Timmer, have to be virtue. Like, I need you to be a virtuous person. You got to be loving and kind and merciful and all of those things, right? And what's that going to cost? At some point in your life, that might cost you thinking that I am a good person. Like, you might not like me for a while, or you might not think that I have the right priorities for you. But down the road, here's the great irony of this. I've seen this again and again. The parents that tried real hard to be buddies with their children and to, you know, get other priorities for them, a lot of times their relationships don't work out that well, right? Like, you taught the kid their whole life that career is first. And that means you spend a lot of time on your career and not with them. And you push them towards a particular career. And now they live on a different continent, or they live on the other side of the country, and you never see them, and they're focused on their career, and you wonder, why my relationship isn't so great? Well, we're all just living out our priorities, right? And so if you live out virtue, here's the irony is, if you live out virtue at the expense of being liked by your kids, am I guaranteeing that's going to work out? No. But in my experience, and I think biblically, the principles in the scripture assure us that that is much more likely to work out. That if you work on growing a virtuous child, that in the end, you guys probably will be buddies, ultimately.
Well, and that happens down the road, too.
Yes,
you know,
down the road.
If you think about it, down the road, I can't emphasize that enough. You know, one day the gap between you and your children's really going to close in. One day they two are going to be married, maybe be a religious, maybe they'll be, you know, whatever it might be. But that's way later. And I think that too soon people try to enter into that friendship. There should always be a sense of mentorship. But I think also as well, I see within some of the traditional Catholic homes too, there needs to be respect of the parents for the children and respecting them as adults as they're coming into maturity as well. Like, there's accountability, but I respect your opinion. I respect your choices. I respect that, you know, you are free to make your own choices. And while you should know what my expectations are, there is that allowance for the development of how the relational dynamic works.
Yeah, I've seen this a lot when kids grow, like they're getting into that 18 or they're getting in early 20s, they're having relationships, they're thinking about getting married perhaps, and the parents are like, oh no. And you know what? The parents might be right about that, but what I've seen happen is the parents at some level have to just let go, right? You got to just like, all right, I think this is a mistake, but I'm not going to completely burn our relationship over what I think the mistake you're making. Because again, down the road, as a parent, you're going to want not only that relationship with your son or daughter, but with your grandkids. Think long term. And you're right. I think that's a good point, Timmy, to bring up that, yes, you know, during that formative stage, we're there to guide, and sometimes they're not going to like us for it. And then there's a time where we're going to say, all right, I've done what I can. You're going to have to make your own decisions here. And there's a letting go process. Mm-hmm. I'm frankly not looking forward to that in my own life. I don't want to do the letting go, but I understand that, yeah, it's got to happen.
Well, and I remember a conversation I had with a friend a few years ago, and she was in her like late 30s, and she was talking about how she realized her relationship with her mom, she still kind of felt like a kid. And she said, I act like a kid with my mom. I remember her saying, you know, I'm at a point where I should be taking interest in what my mom's interested in. Like, maybe my mom really likes this book. Maybe I should ask her about these books. Like, I shouldn't just expect my mom to be the person checking, watching over me. Like, I'm not a five-year-old anymore. And it was interesting to see her as she spoke out and talked about that dynamic and how it changed. And there's a responsibility that changes on both sides.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So, Timmery, before the break, we've been talking about parenting and how your relationship with your children changes as they get older. And sometimes, girls, when they get back within their parents, sometimes, you know, it's like they're a little girl again. And Timmery, we were talking during the break. You're right. Boys do this too. And Frank, maybe I've been. I think I've done this.
Oh, no.
Where, you know, at home, you know, I got a lot of things that I do. I do the dishes every day. But then you get back to where your mom is. Well, you know, mom takes care of
everything. I have friends who won't visit their in-laws because the husband just reverts to a five-year-old,
yeah,
doesn't help with their kids. Like,
I have no doubt about
that. Completely changes. But I also hear a lot of complaint from young men as well who are married. We're like, man, my wife's calling her mom all the time. Like, we can't have a dynamic and interaction between the two of us without her pulling her parents in some way.
Yeah, this is.
And I think that this is something, you know, to work on, you know, that sense of, yes, independence is good, but also a balance with, you've got to be able to handle situations on your own as well.
Well, and especially in that early married stage, this is not what we were talking about, but this is a good point. So on my last segment, on the last show, from experience and from a lot of other couples that I've seen, there is a problem that arises, that mother playing too big of a role in the new family. Okay, and there has to be a break there. I suppose it can go other ways, but this is probably how I've seen it. And there has to be a point where the parents of the bride say, here you go. You know, like, nope, that's your family. You're doing your thing. Because the husband and the wife have to build that new relationship. And you can't have the mother-in-law playing. That's why, you know,
on either side.
I guess it is a stereotype, but the mother-in-law, you're right, on either side, cannot be playing that role. Yeah, you're right, Timmery. That's a good point. It can come on the male side
as
well.
I have a lot of friends who are really struggling with this on both sides right now.
Yeah, you're right. Both sides. That's a good point. So if you're a mother-in-law or a future mother-in-law, yeah, there's got to be a stepping back at some level to give that young couple a chance to really make it on their own. And if you're a young couple and you're like, well, you know, my mom said this, the husband does not want to hear that. If you're a young man and you're like, well, my mom did it this way, your wife does not want to hear that. Okay, no. Doesn't matter what your mom did.
Are you talking from experience right now?
No, actually, this one, frankly, I'm not on this one. I mean, we've got good in-laws on both. It's great. But I have seen it a lot where the husband and the wife have to come together and be independent. I think one of the reasons that hasn't played such a big role is that my wife and I have lived so far from the in-laws almost our entire married life. And so
I'm laughing right
now,
I mean? because that's
now
changing.
Now we're going. We'll see. I'll come back and we'll see how it goes. No, I'm sure it'll be fine. But admittedly, that may have been different if we had been living down the street from my mom or living down the street from her parents. Yes, of course. And so, but I have seen it where, you know what? The mother-in-law is just playing the wrong role in this relationship. And it's not always their fault, right? Like if you're the husband and you're calling mom every day, and you're judging your wife based on that, no. If you're the wife calling mom every day and judging your husband based on, no, right? I'm not saying there can't be parental influence, you know, don't get me wrong, but Yeah, there has to be a separation. Has to be a break.
All right. Well, before we go, I want to recommend Radiant and Valiant magazine. They're published by Our Sunday Visitor. They are awesome supporters of Catholic Radio and this show, Trending. You can find them at radiant.osv.org as well as valiant.osv.org. I have a copy here before me of the most recent Radiant magazine, Hope, and it is just beautiful to see all of the pictures, all of the inspiring stories, you know, people who struggle with self-esteem, looking for hairstyles, looking for maybe a fun recipe. It's not cluttered with all of these ads that I feel like a lot of magazines are cluttered with. And I will also throw out there the upcoming magazine, Radiant for Women. I do have a piece coming out in the spring edition.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
We will look for that. And that yes. will be out soon?
I believe in March. I just got a sneak peek preview sent my way that I will be looking at later today.
All right. Last segment, last topic. Let's do some reasons Catholics don't evangelize. One of my favorite priests, Father Dwight Longnecker, has a nice piece at National Catholic Register, offers 10 reasons. I don't think we're going to get to all 10, but evangelization in the Catholic Church, yeah, we could do better. All right, we could do better. But some of the reasons that we don't, his number one is cultural Catholicism. There's a lot of American Catholics who regard their religion as something that they're just born into. You're a cradle Catholic. Do you think that's a big problem?
Oh, I see it with a lot of people that I know. Yeah, there's a point in your faith where you need to take ownership of your faith. But unfortunately, a lot of people go, well, we love Our Lady of Guadalupe. Or, you know, we've always gone to Mass like this as a family and we have dinner after. Like, I see that. I think especially within certain cultures, someone will go, oh, they've got to be Catholic because this is their background.
Right.
Yes, but not necessarily practicing. Are they going to Mass? Not necessarily. Do they baptize their children? Probably in time, but there's not that faithful upbringing. And I would even say that act of adoration of the heart that's taking place from the individual.
Yeah. And I actually think this one is pretty closely related to his second point, which he called over-sacramentalization. And I think what he's getting at here is that people think that Catholicism is just about going and getting the sacraments. So you go to Mass, I'm baptized or whatever, you do the sacraments, and that's basically it, where there's no actual relationship with Jesus. And I know that that sounds very Protestant, and a lot of Catholics are like, I don't even know, I don't even want to know what that means. But the bottom line is, you actually are made for relationship. Like, love is the meaning of life, and that means relationship with God. And that if you don't actually have a relationship with Jesus, you're missing the point of this whole thing.
It's like, I just want to say, hello, you are receiving our Lord in the sacrament of communion, in the Eucharist. But people treat it like a transition. Like, I showed up, I dedicated this hour, I deserve the Eucharist. Maybe it makes them feel good, because it should. It's you being infused with divine presence within you, maybe with condemnation because you haven't been to confession, right? But it's so frustrating, because people just go, oh, I have a confession, I have reconciliation, or someone's dying in the family, I have anointing of the sick. But again, there's not that element of adoring God, of loving him, of focusing on the mercy that he has bestowed upon us.
And I think this plays itself out in all of those times when you're not at Mass. Like, what's your relationship with Jesus like, you know, at work, mm-hmm. or when you're at lunch, or like the rest of the time, right? Like, if it doesn't play a part in the rest of your life, then you probably aren't really getting your Catholicism. If you just think, well, you know, I go, or maybe you go a lot to Mass, but right. ultimately it does have to be that relationship.
Absolutely. Well, parting words. There's more to say on evangelization, but this is Don's last show with us here on Trending. He will be back as a regular guest, but lots of prayers for him. What's coming up in the next year?
Yeah, so my family and I are moving to Oregon, to Eugene, where my in-laws are, so that shall be fun. At the same time, I am trying desperately to finish this movie, Unprotected, which is turning out really cool. I think you're really going to enjoy it, and there's just been a lot of hardships and roadblocks, which makes me think hopefully that it is going to be good, that there's been some spiritual warfare happening. But we are hoping to have that done in the next few months and release it, at least in preview mode, over the summer. please keep, you know, listening to Trending, going to my website, donjohnsonministries.org. There also will be speaking engagements as soon as I get to Oregon. I leave. We've got a Lenten mission several days in Indiana. Awesome. And we're expecting a lot more of those, especially in the fall. So if you want to, for instance, invite me to talk about the sexual revolution and show the movie at your parish, we're booking that as well, particularly like late summer and on. And so between that and a couple of book projects and a couple more video projects, lots of stuff, way too much stuff to do, frankly.
And I want to put a push for doing a screening at your parish, because yeah, I think that what will bear fruit is not only you presenting and giving the movie, but what will happen is a Q&A and the dialogue that will come from this movie, it is going to really impact deeply into people's lives. And I think that that conversation will have just as much of an impact by what it stimulates in the movie that's shown.
Yeah, hopefully we will ultimately get you to think. I mean, movies are about getting you to feel a certain way, but I think you watch this, you're going to be thinking about some of the root causes of so many issues that we have, that we talk about every week on Trending, but that really are affecting your family and your kids and all of these things. So yeah, we're really looking forward to it. Timmery, this has been fantastic. Thanks so much
for being with me, Don.
And we will see you next week with Timmery on Trending. And until I come back, we'll see you then.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Don and Timmery. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.